Thank you for listening to this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more teachings or to subscribe to our podcast, as well as information about our congregation, visit our website at forerunnerfellowship.org.
Well, we are in our series entitled The Culture of the Kingdom, and this is an extended series that we're doing on the Sermon on the Mount. If you guys don't know what that is, Matthew 5, 6, and 7, it's probably Jesus' most famous sermon, or one of them. And it was his introduction of what it means to be a Christian, what it means to be a follower of Jesus. Why did he come? What was he about? What were his primary teachings? And really everything that Jesus taught in the rest of his teachings, you can really find the root system in the Sermon on the Mount. So Matthew 5, 6, and 7, if you need a good place to camp out for a good long time and find out who Jesus is and what he's about and what it means to be a believer and a follower of him, Matthew 5, 6, and 7 is a great place to spend some time. And so we are. I mean, we're in session 28 this morning on the Sermon on the Mount. So we call it Culture of the Kingdom. It's session 28. And the title of the message this morning is Refusing to Give Anger Any Place. And we're going to look at not only the Sermon on the Mount, but Sermon on the Mount is going to be our primary focus. We're going to look at what Jesus taught about the subject of anger and what it does and where it comes from and why and how do we avoid it. And then we're also going to see a few of the statements that Paul followed up with in some of his writings related to this issue. And so we actually want to start this morning by identifying the way that anger operates, and we're going to start in a spot that you might think, well, how does that have anything to do with anger? We're going to start with the fruit of the Spirit. We're going to go to Galatians 5, and we're going to spend a little bit of time here as an introduction in Galatians 5, talking about the fruit of the Spirit, and the whole passage about the fruit of the Spirit actually is related to don't be angry. And when you kind of flesh it out and you read the rest of the verses connected to the fruit of the Spirit, you can see it. That's not the only thing it's communicating, but it's a significant point. So fruit of the Spirit, Galatians 5, 22 through 23, you know it. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Instead of forbearance, yours might say patience. It's the translation I'm used to. But the fruit of the Spirit. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. You got these nine fruit of the Spirit. Think about how not angry these words sound. Think about how happy and like your heart's in a good spot these nine fruit of the Spirit sound. And this is the fruit of the Spirit. This is what comes out of the Spirit when we've got the Spirit of God living in us, when we're submitting to the Spirit of God instead of giving way to our own desires and ambitions. All right, so let's look now at, in the same passage, this is Paul setting up for the fruit of the Spirit. And he says this, Galatians 5, 13. So 13 through 16, this is just a few verses before. Paul says, serve one another humbly in love. This is the way that we're supposed to operate, the way we're supposed to be believers. Serve one another humbly in love, for the entire law is fulfilled in keeping this one command, love your neighbor as yourself. And now he goes, but let me tell you what is the opposite of this. Let me tell you now what is kind of the natural process of the human heart and the natural way that things can happen in a church congregation, in a small group, in your friendships, in your marriage. Let me tell you what is the natural thing, and if you're not careful, this will happen. This one command, love your neighbor as yourself. If you bite and devour each other, watch out, or you will be destroyed by each other. So I say walk by the Spirit so that you'll not gratify the desires of the flesh. Paul is saying, I know the default in all of you. The default is you're going to bite at each other, you're going to devour one another, and you don't realize it, but by doing that, by giving into that, you're going to destroy one another. You're going to destroy yourselves, you're going to destroy the purposes of the church, you're going to destroy all sorts of purposes of God. That's the default. But Paul says, but I say, don't do that. Instead, walk by the Spirit. Oh, yeah, here's the fruit of the Spirit. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. So Paul is giving the fruit of the Spirit as an answer that we would not bite at each other and devour one another, that there would not be that sort of infighting, that sort of aggression in the church. Now he says, in that same passage where he's talking about what comes out as we start biting at each other with the kind of the natural process, he gives us the opposite of the fruit of the Spirit. You know, there's two lists in Galatians 5. One is the good list that we can quote that we like, fruit of the Spirit. The other is a list of yucky stuff. And Paul's like, avoid the yucky stuff, embrace the good stuff. And look at this. This is so interesting to me. Over half of the list that Paul gives, over half of the list that he describes as the acts of the flesh, over half of the list that Paul gives of the acts of the flesh are related to anger. There's a bunch of them that are related to sexual immorality, but there's actually more related to anger. He calls all of these the acts of the flesh. He says this, Galatians 5 as well. The acts of the flesh are obvious. Sexual immorality, impurity, debauchery, idolatry, and witchcraft. But now look at the rest of these that I got underlined here. Hatred, discord, jealousy, fits of rage, selfish ambition, dissensions, factions, and envy. All of these have anger at their core. All of these are actually about anger expressed in different ways. You could call these expressions of anger. Now, Paul just got done saying, don't bite at each other and devour each other. How does that biting and devouring look? It looks like hatred, discord, jealousy, fits of rage, selfish ambition, dissensions, factions, and envy. These things are the ways that we bite at each other and devour one another. These are the ways that the church is, it degrades. These are the ways that, remember a minute ago, Paul said, if you do these things, you will destroy one another. It says, watch out, or you will be destroyed by each other. You'll be destroyed. I don't know about you, but that's not a word I want to be talking about or thinking about as a potential option for going to church. I mean, like, I thought we were supposed to be into like life and joy and happiness and stuff, like the progression of the Holy Spirit in our lives and maturity and pressing through, not destroying one another. But here's what the expressions of anger do. They destroy one another. You know, it's so interesting too. Typically, anger begets anger. When somebody does something, when somebody does one of these, you know, hatred, normally the normal human process is, if you hate me, I hate you. If you discord me, I discord you. I'll take out all your cords. The typical process is when there's jealousy, the jealousy goes back. Fits of rage, you hit me, I hit you. You know, the selfish ambition, I'm looking out for myself and I'm not caring about you. I'm not thinking about what you need. I'm thinking about myself. Typically, that winds up getting reciprocated if we're not careful. We wind up destroying each other. There is no place for anger in the church. There is no place. We cannot harbor anger. There's no place for it. It will destroy you. It will destroy us. And it will destroy the purposes of the Lord in a congregation. All right, moving on. Paul says just a little bit later in that same passage, this should say Galatians 5:21, I believe. I might have put 13 through 21, but that's not real. Galatians 5:21, he just got done saying all this. Don't be in discord. I tell you, follow the ways of the Spirit, live out the fruit of the Spirit. But before he gets to the fruit of the Spirit, he says this about that list of anger. He says, I warn you as I did before. So Paul's like made this a big deal when he was with the Galatian church. He warned them, and now he's warning them again. He says, I'm warning you. I want you to pay attention to me. This is important that you hear Papa Paul say it. I'm warning you, those that live like this won't inherit the kingdom of God. Paul's talking to the church. He's not talking to lost people. He's talking to very saved people. He says, you will devour each other and you won't inherit the kingdom of heaven. You won't inherit it. The issue of anger is poison. The issue of anger will destroy you. It will destroy everything you hold dear. The place of anger, there's no place for it. We've got to fight anger like a big giant in our life. We can give no place to anger. All right? Well, now, with that as the backdrop, let's look at the Sermon on the Mount a little bit, because Jesus said quite a bit about anger in the Sermon on the Mount. We want to not have an angry heart. And anywhere, you know what the greatest thing is? Every time you read the Bible, and it's like, don't do this, stop doing that, quit being stupid. Every time you read something that says, don't do it, that's a permission to ask God for grace to quit. That's a permission to go, God, help me, Because you can't, I can't do anything without you. I can't get saved without you. I can't repent without you. I can't, I am really a weak person. So you got this list of don'ts. I'm looking at that as a list of helps. But it's, that's the process. We engage God and we ask him for help and he gives us help. If you don't ask God for help, there's a lot of help you won't get. So really, if you're feeling like, oh my gosh, I feel overwhelmed, I feel loaded down by anger, or pick a sin, pick an issue. I feel loaded down by fill in the blank. That's permission to ask God for help. Wherever you feel weakest, you must stay in conversation with Jesus about that forever. Wherever you feel weakest, you must continue to dialogue with the Lord about that, because that's where grace comes. It's the humility of going, I don't have this figured out. I'm really struggling in this area. I'm bad at this. I need you. And God goes, I love that humility. I'll answer that. It's when we stop talking to him, I got this, or I'm tired of asking you, or I'm just going to do it my way. That's where the grace flow stops. That's where the line gets pinched. Wherever you are weakest, you must continue to dialogue with the Lord about that point, and he will continue to release grace to you. You can't quit. You got to keep going. All right, well, let's look at what Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount. Again, Matthew 5, 6, and 7. That's kind of the study of this course, okay? Matthew 5, 6, and 7, and we're here, Matthew 5, 21. Jesus likens anger to murder. How many of y'all committed murder? Don't put your hand up. I don't want to know. There's some things you just repent. Well, Lord, work it out. I don't want to know. Jesus, God, likens anger to murdering a human being, cutting them off. They no longer have life. He uses these terms in the same sentence. He's trying to make a point about how big of a deal anger is. But remember what Paul said? He said, if you bite and devour each other, you'll be destroyed by one another, murdered. You'll be killed naturally and even potentially, spiritually and even potentially naturally. Even potential anger can actually lead to murder, all right? Let's look what Jesus says, Matthew 5, 21. You've heard it said to the people long ago, you shall not murder. And anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. Jesus, and you hear the people like, yeah, murder's bad. He goes, I tell you, anyone who's angry with his brother or sister will be subject to judgment. So you thought murder was bad. Let me tell you, anger's in the same category. What? No. Jesus says, yeah, welcome to my world. He says, I have got a teaching that is important that you understand, because nobody murders somebody, I guess maybe once, but nobody murders somebody apart from anger. And normally, murder isn't the first step. It's cheat them, take from them, belittle them, ruin their name. Normally, anger is progressive and can end in murder. And Jesus wants to connect this. He goes, I want to tell you, if you have anger in your heart against a brother or sister, you're subject to judgment. That's like so intense. Because Jesus is going, guys, we've been dabbling in anger and there's no place for it. It's like an illegal narcotic. Don't even take one hit. We don't want it. We don't want this. You can't have this. You can't have it. You got to fight against this. There's no place for anger. Zero place. Anger is the path to murder. We don't want to take any steps down that road. He says it's a really important deal. Paul talks about one of the measures of maturity. This is 1 Corinthians 13. You guys know the love chapter. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 5, and one of the components of love is that it's not easily angered. If you find yourself easily angered, that's a point of dialogue you want to be having with the Lord. Like, Lord, oh God, help me. Because what that means is we're not operating in love, because love isn't easily angered. Love is the antidote. Remember, fruit of the Spirit? Love, joy, peace. It was the first one he listed, okay? The fruit of the Spirit is the antidote to anger. We got to walk in the fruit of the Spirit, submitted to the Holy Spirit. And again, we do that in part by just going, help! Ah! I'm a train wreck! God loves it when you, like, own it. When you just go, I am totally messed up in this area. I'm depleted. I'm this, 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 and this. He already knows. But the grace doesn't come until you own it. So a significant part of the way that we get, like, victory in these areas is we talk to Jesus about it. And we just say, God, help me. And he'll release help to you. A broken and contrite heart he has yet to deny. He likes you. But he won't force his way through your pride. He wants you to submit and go, big God, little me, you have the answers, and I need them. I need help. And he'll release help to you. And he knows where you're messed up. And you're messed up different than the person next to you, and they're messed up too. We all got issues. But we've got to reach out to him for the help and the solution. One of the marks of maturity, one of the expressions of love, is that it isn't easily angered. If you're operating in love, if love is the focal point, if love is the pursuit, loving God and loving people. Because remember, Paul said, the whole thing is all wrapped up in this. Love your neighbor as yourself. If we've got that love thing flowing, anger is not going to be what naturally flows out of us. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness is going to be flowing out of us. So that's really where we want to be. We don't want to be defensive. Look at Jesus here in Matthew 5:39. I know this doesn't, at a first reading, sound like he's talking about anger and talking about defensiveness, but it's definitely included in there once you get the context. Jesus said, Matthew 5:39, I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If someone strikes you on the cheek, turn to them the other also. The normal thought process is, you slapped me, you're going down, sucker. That's the normal thought process. Okay, if you slap my cheek, you got one coming, and it's not going to be open-handed. That fist is coming, okay? You slap me. How dare you? It's defensiveness. It's a defensiveness. Now, I don't even want to focus only on the most extreme example of being slapped. I want to talk about somebody saying something to you. They call you a name. They give you a look. Some version of a lesser slap, if you will. Same idea. Don't defend yourself. Don't defend yourself. Don't stand there. Instead, go low and figure out a way to serve them. See, what happens is when someone wrongs us, and you're going to get wronged this week. I'm sorry. It's going to happen. Something bad's going to happen. It's life. It's humans. Okay? When bad things happen, we can't let those bad things own us and dictate our responses. Jesus says when the bad things happen, instead go low. Figure out how to serve the one that just batted you. You could say it this way, in your heart, I am resisting you, evil person. Whatever evil person might be your best friend. I mean, the evil person could be anybody, and you've been the evil person before too, so don't you point the finger. Whoever that evil person is that just did you wrong, they just did something to you, instead of responding to them the way that they did you, instead respond to them and serve them. Find a way to bless them, help them, strengthen them, serve them. Think about what that's doing in your heart. Just think about the clutter. Who really likes, actually enjoys feeling angry? You're totally not fun to be around. You know, the whole, like, life is sapped of its joy when you're angry. Nothing. The things that you like the most, your favorite meal, it's no good. Because you're angry inside. Anger is cancer. We do not want to give cancer a place. Instead, free up that cancer in a moment. Here's how you do it. Somebody does something to you you don't like. It's not right. They didn't think about you right. They did something wrong. They stole something from you. Instead of responding to them and feeding the anger monster, instead respond with a way that will free up your heart and allow you to live in love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness the rest of your days. Serve them. That's how Jesus said we're supposed to deal. Instead of being defensive, we're supposed to be serving. He said, that's one of the ways, that's one of the secrets to keeping your heart from anger. Serve them. This works in every situation. That person at work, that person that used to be in your life and they're not anymore, that person who cut you off on the road, you know what I mean? This concept of serve them, it frees up your heart. Jesus wants us to live free, not holding debts over people. He doesn't want us to live that way. It kills us. It destroys. It devours us. It makes us no good. And then it winds up being a cancer that even grows in a community. Let us avoid anger instead of the fight to be right. I love 1 Corinthians 6:7. Paul's crazy. He says crazy stuff. He says, why not just rather be wronged Why not rather be cheated? And he's answering the same question, defensiveness. You said something to me, I'm saying something back. You took something from me, I'm taking something bigger. I'm taking your car. You won't even find that title. It's mine. Like, Paul's like, who made you God? Like, why not rather be cheated and just trust the Lord that you're going to be okay? Why not rather be wronged? Why not? I mean, you're not signing up to go get taken advantage of, but when you are taken advantage of, why allow cancer to grow in your heart as your response? Instead, why not rather be cheated? Why not rather be wronged? It's this issue of anger, because our tendency is when something happens, anger. Remember the list that Paul gave out? And over half of it are dealing with responses of the heart related to anger, because Paul knows humans. He knows, he's like, actually, I could probably come up with 10 more words because I know anger is lurking at the door. It is hiding out at all y'all, and it wants expression, and it can look like this, 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 and this. Don't give way to it. Instead, why not rather be cheated? Like, really, your heart's happy. You know, you're good with God. You can pray. You actually blessed somebody. And so many times when you bless somebody, even if they're your enemy, they rethink how they want to deal with you next time. I mean, that's just kind of how it works. Instead of perpetuating the cancer, Paul's like, why not just rather be cheated? Like, come on. You're going to live forever. So they stole your thing. They said mean words. Like, you're going to live forever. Why not rather be cheated and have a happy heart till you die and get to experience the eternal rewards on a bright spirit because you lived free instead of holding guilt over people? Why not rather be cheated? Really, it's like, and then Paul lived that. How many times was he cheated, wronged, you know, all that? Jesus lived that. I mean, this is the model. This is the model. Let us not be defensive. Let us not be easily angered. Why not rather be cheated? Self-seeking. 1 Corinthians 13:5. This is another one of those love is or love is not. Love is not rude. It is not self-seeking. It's another expression of love. But just, I want to talk about the self-seeking thing. I actually think this is just my opinion. I could be wrong. I think this is the primary reason for anger. Self-seeking. I want what I want, and I don't want it when you give me what I don't want. I want what I want. Self-seeking. And so every situation we walk into, if we're not careful, our primary motive is me. I want me. I want what I want. And when things don't happen the way I want it, I now want to feel justified to go fight you, to go make you do what I want, to enforce my will, enforce what. It says love is not self-seeking. Like, was Jesus self-seeking? Like, how was Jesus self-seeking and wound up with you and me? Poor sap. I mean, my goodness, Jesus was not self-seeking because love isn't. Love is not about self. Love is pouring out. But here's the thing. You guys know the concept of the stagnant, you know, pond versus the flowing, you know, lake that's got the dam that's running over. That water's moving. There's life in it. There's newness. If you just dam that thing up and nothing ever comes out, there's no flow. This is what love is supposed to be. Love is not a deposit that was given to you at salvation that you're just supposed to hold on to. Love is supposed to be a river that's flowing. And the more you put it out, the more you're getting from up top. And the wider you make your out, your dam, you know, you open up that spillway at the end of the lake, the wider you make that, the more you get. And the more you're getting, the more you're good to go. You're not easily angered. You're not self-seeking. You're not this, you're not that, because love isn't. The focus is love. Really, the objective really isn't don't be angry. The objective is be loving. Have love, flow in love. Love is the antidote. But I'm just wanting to talk a lot about anger. Jesus did in the Sermon on the Mount. I'm wanting to talk a little bit about it so as to go, how much anger is in me and why is that? Where is that coming from and what's my real issue? We need to be operating in love. And as we do, as we respond to circumstances instead of the acts of the flesh, as we intentionally respond to circumstances with the fruit of the Spirit, we're now having that thing flow. And things start working, and our heart is uncluttered. You guys get that picture, that clogged up heart with all the gunk and the cancer, and just, ugh, it's a terrible way to live. It just doesn't feel good. It feels all knotted up and yucky. It's not God's intention. Instead, it's love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness. And where you lack, ask him for help and he'll help you. A couple more points here. Just about the overall reality of our heart and anger. We can't hold grudges. We can't hold grudges. Everything in us wants to keep an account of what people have done to us. I think actually our biggest issues related to anger are the people that we know the best, not the people on the street we met one time that did something terrible. Honestly, I think the guy that stole your wallet that one time, you have an easier time forgiving them than the people in your life that do that same thing again and again. I told you don't do it, and they did it again. And we have this tendency in our heart to hold grudges, and there's no place for it. It's killing you. It's destroying you from within. Colossians 3:13, 1 Corinthians 13:4. Bear with each other and forgive whatever grievances you may have against one another. You're going to have grievances against each other. You're going to. You're human. You bump one another. I bump you. You bump me. It's life. There are going to be grievances. But you've got to forgive them. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. Think about how many times you did the Lord wrong. You know? I mean, it's like this is how this forgiveness thing works. I forgave you once. Well, good. That was the first time of many. I'm sure I'll need it again. Hope that bank account's got room for a lot of zeros because I'm sure I'm going to mess you over many times. Forgive whatever grievances. Whatever grievances. I got grievance against you. Well, of course. We're human. Forgive me. And I got to forgive you. Forgive grievances. The opposite is 1 Corinthians 13:4, keeping record of wrongs. Keeping record. You probably don't have them written down, but you got them in your brain. They did this, and they did this. This is the 16th time they've done that thing. You need to get rid of the numbers. You need to erase it. You need to clean the slate. And I want to tell you, there will be more things on the slate tomorrow. You got to clean the slate. Forgive whatever grievances you have against one another. Or you'll devour and bite each other and destroy one another. Forgive whatever grievances. But they did it again. Yes, of course they did. Just like you did. You did it too. It wasn't to them, it was to the other person. And the other person is having to work through forgiveness for you, just like you're having to work through forgiveness for. That's life. That's not their bad, you're bad. That's human. That's how it is. That's why Paul talks about this so, like, matter-of-factly. He's like, forgive whatever grievances. I don't have grievances. Oh, come on, liar. You totally have grievances. You all do. Because they're human, and they did human stuff yesterday, and that bumped you in a way that really bugged you. I guess I do kind of have grievances. Yeah, forgive them actively. Be intentional to forgive whoever has grievances, and don't keep records of wrong. If you've got in your mind any place where you're like, they did this to me, and they did this, and they did this, you need to know you're the one sinning right now, not them. You're the one in sin. Don't keep the record. Okay, Lord, help me wipe off the record. Pretend it's a little whiteboard about this big. You got all their name up at the top and then 20 bad things they did to me. Just dry erase marker, eraser. Just get in there and erase it all out. Clean slate. Have they ever done anything to you? Never. Never, not once. They're perfect. Perfect angel. I'm telling you, we got to live this way because if you keep a record of wrongs, you're going to wind up harboring grudges, resentment, and that affects the way you relate to them. Honestly, I care about the way we relate to each other, but if I'm just selfish and honest, I care way more about me and God and you and God. And when you got that clutter in your soul that God says don't have that, it's cancer that's taking up space that's supposed to be filled with love, joy, and goodness. And there's no room for it because there's cancer in there. It's a dark hole with cancer growing in it, and you're feeding it. Don't hold grudges. Another one, Ephesians 4. This is the subject. We know this verse, but it's important. This protects you. It protects the kingdom. It protects those you love. It is a protection clause. It is protection. in your anger, do not sin. And then Paul elaborates on that age-old, you know, saying. He's quoting the Old Testament. He's saying, in your anger, don't sin. And then he says, let me tell you one of the ways that you do that. You're going to have anger, but do not let the sun go down while you are still angry. Meaning, don't let the 24-hour period that you are currently in lapse while you're going. Don't go to bed angry. Don't go. If you're awake and you're angry, you got to deal with it before you go night-night. Don't let it. The enemy comes in. You go to bed with an angry heart, there's opportunity for the enemy to sow in discord even while you're sleeping in your dreams. Dreams, we have a tendency to even believe our own dreams more than sometimes we would statements we say during the day. It gets into us. It gets in the water. It's poison in the water. Don't go to bed. Plus, you wind up creating discord between you and the person that you're angry with. And they probably know this verse, and they know you did it. It creates additional discord. Okay, don't let the sun go down. You're like, well, man, I'd have to, like, call everybody every day. Good, start there. Get all that out, and in 3 weeks, you'll be fine. You might have a tumultuous next 21 days of your life having to make a bunch of phone calls every day before you go to bed. I'm sorry, I'm angry at you. Let's work through it. You might, but don't go to bed angry. Paul says this is one of the ways you sin in your anger. You're angry, and you did nothing about it. You just went to sleep and pretended like it wasn't there. You're giving cancer opportunity to grow while you sleep. And not only that, the next morning when you wake up, you're less likely to deal with it. And next morning when you wake up, you're impacted by that anger from yesterday instead of clean slate. His mercies are new every morning. You got to operate in those mercies instead of operating in contagious cancer in your soul, okay? All right, let's not give way to angry words. Look here at Matthew 5, 43 through 48. This is the primary subject where Jesus is talking about anger. He said it's not the only in the Sermon on the Mount. We've looked at a couple of them. But let's look at it here. Matthew 5, 43 through 48. I want to talk about angry words. We got to be careful with our words. Not just a minute ago, we were looking at our heart. We're looking at what was in our heart, mostly. Now we're going to look at what comes out of our mouth, and we want to be careful. You have heard it said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies, pray, say nice words to the Father. Pray for those who persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. And there's a little jab in there. Don't be sons of the other guy. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good. He sends his rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? And if you greet only your brothers, what are you doing more than others? Do not even the pagans do that? Be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect. A lot of this greeting, that's those words, praying for other, those words, the responses, a couple other places in there I forgot to highlight. But instead of operating in words that are cutting, in words that express anger, instead, we're supposed to operate with words that are the fruit of the Spirit, all those things we were reading about a minute ago. Now let's just look at a few ways that we can be expressing hatred with our words if we're not careful. Don't be argumentative. Don't be argumentative. It's not helpful. You think, well, no, I'm just discussing. Are you? There's a difference between discussing and maybe that other thing. Discussing's good. How are you carrying your heart? What are you feeling in your heart as you're discussing? Okay? That will tell you whether you are arguing or not. All right? Don't be argumentative. Look at 2 Timothy 2:23 and then also Titus 3:9. Don't have anything to do with foolish and stupid arguments. You know they produce quarrels. Quarrels. That was one of the things. Factions and discord. Quarrels. That was one of the things Paul said, don't do. This is the way that you wind up operating in the flesh. He says, don't do this. He says, I want to tell you that having stupid arguments, arguing, you don't have anything. It's foolishness. It doesn't accomplish anything. It just makes two people mad. It doesn't help. And it produces additional quarrels within your family, your church, your small group, your business partnership, whatever. Like, don't quarrel. Don't argue. Well, how do I do that? I don't really know. I'm trying to figure that one out myself. But I can tell you that when we come to those moments where we feel like arguing, it comes back to the self-seeking thing again. I want to enforce my way. Why not rather be cheated? Hey, you know what? You and I, we don't see eye to eye on that, but it's okay. Let's do it your way. And then just pray, oh, God, protect us if we're doing something stupid. Why not rather be cheated? Why not rather be wrong? It seems to me God would honor that over and above fighting, quarreling, and arguing. Because God says, don't do those things. But he does say, go low and get cheated. Okay, I'm just going low and get cheated. It seems to me like you're losing out here. But whatever, God, I'm going to do it your way. So you better fix it, because otherwise we're all going to die. Trust the Lord instead of fight for your way. Don't argue. It's not helpful. Don't argue. Avoid foolish controversies. Now, I know this is doctrinal in this particular one. Avoid foolish controversies and genealogies and arguments and quarrels about the law because they're unprofitable and useless. But really, no matter what quarrels, controversies, and arguments, they're unprofitable and useless. They're unprofitable. Just think about that. When was the last time you had an argument and you walked away going, profitable? Best day ever. It's not profitable. It's useless. It was a waste of your time. Even more than that, it was a sowing of dissension. It was totally unhelpful. Yeah, but I got my way. Careful there. You get your way too much, you might wind up someplace you don't want to be. I don't want to get my way. I want to get his way. I want to figure out how to crucify this flesh. I want to figure out how to stop trying to get my way. I want to try to get his way. And his way is about love and unity and not arguing. But our tendency is argue and fight and mine. And that's what we want. It's like, no, that's really not the way there. James 5:9, let me tell you another way our words express anger. Grumbling. Don't grumble against each other, brothers, or you'll be judged. See, we like to throw out all of these, or you'll be judged. We throw them all out because we don't understand it. We don't know what the ramifications of that are. So we just don't want to talk about them. It's over and over and over. Do not, or you'll be judged. Anger in your heart towards your brother, subject to judgment. And these are Bible verses for Christians. Don't grumble. What does grumbling look like? It's talking bad about people. It's saying, I can't believe they're stupid about this. Can't believe they did this. Grumbling is never to the person. It's always behind the person's back. Grumbling is always talking about how bad and dumb they are to somebody else. Don't do that. Don't talk about how bad and dumb they are. You're just as bad and dumb. You're just bad and dumb to somebody else. Somebody else is over there trying to figure out how not to grumble about you. This is just, there's no one good, no, not one. I'm like you. We're all the same. We're all the same. Every one of us has done things this week that are grumbleable, that are worthy of grumbling. But we're told, don't do that. Just, you're like them. You're going to grumble against them. Do you realize? You take the plank out of your eye. Do you realize you're in the same boat? You're just like them. Don't grumble. We've got to be careful to not express anger in the form of grumbling. Grumbling. Yeah, man, they're so, I can't believe they did this. You know, we have got to get away from this. This has no place. It's not like we ought to cut down a little. This has no place. This is eating a stick of dynamite. Okay? Don't eat dynamite. Bad plan. I saw a cartoon happen one time. The thing just blew up. It was a horrible plan. You can't do this. The grumbling is destroying the church. It's destroying the one who grumbles. It's destroying the one that's being grumbled against. It's destroying the one who's hearing you grumble. It's bad, bad, bad. It's the trinity of bad. Okay, it's just bad everywhere. Don't grumble. Philippians 2:14, similarly, do everything without complaining or arguing. There's that arguing again. Complaining, though. Oh, I can't believe God did this thing. Oh, I hate it. Why not just rather be cheated? Why not just do the thing? You know what? The thing that you want to complain about, it really might be stupid. Who cares? Why is that the really big deal? Well, this is stupid, so I don't want to do it. Wait, that's ridiculous. Don't complain. And I'll just tell you as a leader, like this is so tough. Because as a leader, and all of you are leaders in some sphere of your life, over your family, in your workplace, on the block, with your friend group, you're a leader somewhere, okay? As a leader, here's what I bet is happening in your life. You're trying. I bet you're trying to do a good job. I doubt any of you are waking up in the morning going, Lord, help me to do the worst job ever over those I'm leading. Anoint me for terrible leadership. I need it. I need a flow. That thing Brad was talking about, the flow of horrible leadership. I want it. Anoint me. Give me the double portion. None of you are doing that. You're trying. You're trying. You're trying to keep their interests in mind. You're trying to help. You're trying. And you're failing because you're human. But so are they, and so is everybody else. Don't complain. This is the way the enemy is like so clever. He's like, oh, I know what I'll do. I'll turn them against each other by default things that happen every day in their life. They won't even need a crazy circumstance. They'll just bump each other because they're human, and then I'll maximize on that, and I'll get them to complain so I can sow cancer into them. Like, we can't give in and complain. Complaining has no place in the body of Christ. It has zero place out of any of our mouths ever. It's cancer. We can't complain. It's an expression of anger. I didn't get what I want. I don't like the trajectory. I can't believe I have to do this. And then we express it, and what we don't realize is there's life in the power of the tongue. And out of our mouth is coming curses and cancer. We're giving way to these expressions of anger. Last one, and we'll close out. Ephesians 4:29. I think part of this has to do with sarcasm, but really it's just cutting people. Saying things that are cutting. It's not complaining about them. It's just cutting them down. It's just belittling. Say what builds up, not what tears down. Ephesians 4:29. Because when we tear somebody else down, it's the pride, but it's anger again. We're tearing them down for some reason related to us wanting to have an edge on them. Us wanting to make them look bad. There's some motive in the heart that would cause us to say something ill against another person. And whatever that is, it's actually an expression of anger. But here's what Paul says as the way we're to operate with our mouths related to the subject of anger and everything. Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. So before you say that thing, do the Ephesians 4:29 checklist. Okay? Yeah, that sarcastic thing that's just going to cut. That cruel thing, that mean thing, that thing that you want to say about that person, that way you want to belittle that person, just look at it. Unwholesome talk, only what's helpful for building them up. And I'll just throw it in there because it takes so much more work according to their needs. So it's not even build them up according to what you think is smart. It's building them up according to their needs, which means you had to actually think about them a little bit. What did they need? What do they need to hear? What words do they need? This is how we're supposed to operate. This is the way of love. This is the way of love. I can tell you this. When we're operating in the flow of love, anger is far from us. Easily angered, you will not be. When you're not operating in love, when you're thinking about self, when you're all about, I need to protect my borders and make sure I get what I want, my needs, self-seeking, when that's your primary issue, and again, I'm thinking, just my thought, I think that the root of all anger is self-seeking. I think that. I want me. I want mine. I don't like what you just said. It makes me look dumb. I don't like what you want from me. It's not what I want to give. I think self-seeking is the issue of anger, is the root, is my opinion. When we make that our focus, then we got to live with all the cancer that comes with it. Instead, when we're trying not to be self-seeking, we're going, oh, God, help me to love. Help me to operate in love. The Lord releases greater grace to you, and he will help you. He'll help you overcome, and he'll help you live in the fruit of the Spirit. He'll help you live free from stuff. For me, this is all about freedom. It's all about living with a happy heart before God instead of a clogged up one. I don't like it. When I'm not right with the Lord because I've done something that I shouldn't have, like been angry, and Jesus said, you can get judged for that. When I'm walking around with anger in my heart, I don't feel God. I don't like the Bible. I don't like you. I don't like me. I don't like anything. Like, what a trap the enemy has set. He has made anger so justified, we've all bought the lie. We've all bought in. But it's destroying us. It is destroying us, and there's no place for it. Father.
This concludes this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more information about our congregation, visit forerunnerfellowship.org. Thank you.